This is Studio 809 Podcasts, informing, connecting, and empowering the residents of the Pikes Peak region.
Welcome to Peak Environment, the Pikes Peak region's podcast about environmental stewardship. This episode features the Sustainability in Progress monthly speaker program. It happens the third Wednesday of every month and is presented by the Peak Alliance for a Sustainable Future. For more information, visit peakalliance.org. See the show notes for a link to the speaker's slides from this episode. A quick nod to Pikes Peak Permaculture for supporting Peak Environment. Visit pikespeakpermaculture.org for opportunities to learn more about sustainable organic living through permaculture, workshops, classes, field trips, and networking.
Welcome to Sustainability in Progress, SIP for short, June 2025. I'm Mary Barber. I'm a member of the board of Peak Alliance for a Sustainable Future. Welcome. We're so happy you could join us today to learn more and join the conversation about transportation in the Pikes Peak region. We're going to hear today from speakers about a long-range transportation plan that was recently completed and get an update on Mountain Metro Transit. I'd like to say a little bit about Peak Alliance for a Sustainable Future. It's also called Peak Alliance or PASF. And Peak Alliance for a Sustainable Future is a 501c3 organization that strives to promote regional sustainability in the Pikes Peak region and to advance a regional sustainability plan called Looking to Our Future, Pikes Peak Region 2030. The Regional Sustainability Framework or Plan was finalized in 2012. We did that with the help of Pikes Peak Area Council of Governments and over 150 individuals and organizations who participated in putting it together. And again, it was finalized in 2012. As a result of the plan, PAS was formed to try to help promote the plan and keep track of how well we're meeting the goals that we set out. The plan features stretch goals for 10 issue areas: agriculture, arts and culture, built and natural environment, economic development, education, energy, health, material management and procurement, transportation, and water quantity. You can download a copy of the plan from our website at peakalliance.co.org. Outreach, education, and awareness are a major focus of our work. So we've been conducting these monthly events called Sustainability in Progress, or SIP for short, to help spread the word. It occurs generally on the third Wednesday of the month, generally from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. on Zoom. We're recording this event for an episode of the Peak Environment podcast. You can find Peak Environment on your favorite podcast app, like Spotify, or at studio809podcast.com. And you can also listen to it by connecting to the Peak Alliance for Sustainable Future website. I want to acknowledge that the land we are on is within the unceded territory of the Nuchu, meaning the people, also referred to as the Utes. Many other federally recognized sovereign nations, including the Kiowa, the Jicarilla, Apache, Comanche, Cheyenne, and Arapaho, also have historic ties to this place. I encourage you to learn more about the legacy of these tribes and the traditional ecological knowledge that can inform our lives and jobs. So now I will introduce Mr. John Leo Sautis. He's the transportation director at the Pikes Peak Area Council of Governments. He works with the Short Range Transportation Improvement Program and the Long Range Transportation Plan, covering regional projects that are using federal dollars for the next 20 plus years. He earned his bachelor degree in political science from the University of Arizona. And he is going to talk specifically today about the adopted 2050 long-range transportation plan for the Pikes Peak region, as well as the role the Pikes Peak Area Council of Governments, or PPACG, plays in bringing together local communities. So take it away, John.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate the opportunity to, again, provide this information. It's sort of a lonely life of transportation planner. Unless there's a problem, people don't really bother to seek us out. So we're glad to have the opportunity to to have a forum to share our information. Think of my presentation as a funnel. I'm going to start with sort of the PPACG in general and sort of get into the plan. And then that will lead down to the real sort of point of the spear, if you will, some of the exciting things that are in the plan for transit that Jacob can talk about. And so I'll lead into Jacob, and Jacob has got a lot of great and exciting transit-related things to chat about. So hopefully you can stay awake through me until you can get to Jacob. The Pikes Peak Area Council of Governments is a voluntary organization of entities and including Park, Teller, and El Paso counties. Within those areas, we have 5 military installations, a little under 800,000 in population, 16 member governments, incorporating a little under 5,000 square miles. So we're a pretty big area when you take all three counties into consideration. So a council of governments is, again, a voluntary thing where these member governments have come together and said, hey, how do we solve our problems that don't necessarily lend itself to arbitrary jurisdictional lines that are just drawn on a map? Things like air quality, water quality, transportation, right? You don't stop when you get to the city limits, right? And air and water doesn't stop at the city limit. Your expectation is that these things are all sort of going to work together, which is, again, why PPACG exists. So all of our member governments can come together and talk about these things of regional concern. As I had mentioned, we are the Council of Governments, Park, Teller, El Paso County, and all of the incorporated cities therein. So remember, there's a difference between an incorporated city or town versus a census place. For example, Falcon, where I used to live, is a place where the census calls is a place and the post office says there's a Falcon post office, but it's not incorporated. So for us, it doesn't have its representation. The folks that live in Falcon, again, this is just an example, they're being represented by El Paso County, right? So unless you're incorporated and have a specific mayor or council or that sort of government hierarchy, you're being represented through our process by either Park, Teller, or El Paso County folks. So within the Council of Governments boundary, there's what's called the Metropolitan Planning Organization, or MPO, boundary. Federal transportation regulations state that any urbanized area over 50,000 in population must form an MPO. And again, that 50,000 in population is based on a density that comes from the census. So when you look at a census block group, if there's enough of those block groups that have 50,000 in population or greater, they would need to form an MPO. Within our area, we have this sort of bigger area that's provided, that's sort of, the urban area of Colorado Springs with Monument, Palmer Lake, Fountain, Manitou Springs. And then you get I'm from Arizona, so you get a Saguaro cactus arm that comes up through Teller County and hits Woodland Park. It's important to sort of recognize that within the MPO, we've got that. When I said the COG is voluntary? So we put together this chart. And again, apologies if there's anyone with vision impairment that can't quite see this. We can make a more accessible version available if necessary, if requested. But you have the MPO, and that, again, is prescriptive by federal regulation. And within that MPO, we have 9 of our member jurisdictions. You'll see them there on the chart as Woodland Park, Teller County, Fountain, Palmer Lake, Monument, El Paso County, Colorado Springs, Manitou Springs, and Green Mountain Falls. Anything that is outside of that MPO but still in the COG has their transportation planning done by what is known as a Transportation Planning Region, or TPR. The Central Front Range TPR is the one that holds most of the rest of the PPACG jurisdictions. And so for the jurisdictions, for what I'm going to talk about today is that MPO area, that urbanized area. And the next slide will give you a blow up of that. But anything outside of that urban area is handled through CDOT and is not part of the plan that I'm going to be chatting about today. they go through what is called a state plan that, again, is run by the Colorado Department of Transportation, or CDOT. So again, so this is that urbanized boundary. So this is the MPO, and this is the area by which we're required to generate a long-range transportation plan. So the long-range transportation plan that Mary had mentioned was just adopted, was adopted in 2025. It incorporates all of the local plans for the jurisdictions that lie within that MPO boundary. And it has component plans. So prior to the MPO plan being finished, we had a transit plan, a specialized human services plan. Jacob will talk more about transit here in a minute. In that process, we had an active transportation plan that talked about bicycle and pedestrian sorts of things. And we also did a freight plan. So all of those things, all of those plans that identified needs and projects and things all rolled up into being part of our transportation plan for this urbanized area within the region. Just so you know, it's updated every 5 years and includes a forecast period of 20 years. That is to say, we can't let it sit on the shelf for too long. Again, it's got to be updated every 5 years. If we were in non-attainment, it would be every 4 years. I'm not sure I've got time to go down the hole of what attainment versus non-attainment is, but Mary, feel free to have me back at another time or have that be another sort of discussion that we can go through. But again, because this region is currently in attainment, we have to revisit every 5 years. And that's just to make sure that you're doing good planning and that the plan doesn't get too old. Additionally, it has to be for a period of at least 20 years, but you can look out farther than that. And again, that's the Fed's way of making sure that you're looking into the future and you're actually doing some planning that makes sense rather than just sort of saying, well, this is going to happen next year, so that'll be our plan. No, they actually want you to do some effort and some thought process into the whole long-range planning process. We'll add that in my bio, when Mary mentioned the Transportation Improvement Program, or the TIP, that is our short-range program, which is actually saying what projects are being done in the next 4 years. So for projects to be eligible to be in the TIP and be eligible for the federal funding, it has to be consistent with this long-range transportation plan. As I had mentioned earlier, the plan has a lot of collaboration with our member jurisdictions, and we take into consideration the component plans. So I think everything here I mentioned once before, the local plans from the jurisdictions, the freight study, a transit plan, specialized human services plan, active transportation plan. The one thing I didn't mention was a congestion management process. The feds have stated that, hey, you can't just automatically go to a solution where you build something, where you widen something, where your solution can't automatically be a roadway. You have to have a process by which you look at other ways of addressing congestion. So that congestion management plan does that. So it allows the jurisdictions to sort of say, hey, these are some other options we can go through without necessarily going straight on to the road widening option. Here are some statistics from the long-range transportation plan. Get ready, Jacob, only got two more slides. We had a survey where we sort of reached out to folks. We had 818 unique responses as part of that survey. Again, it was not a scientifically valid survey. It was self-selecting. So if I liked chihuahuas, I could have texted or emailed all my Chihuahua friends, and they all could have then done the survey, and we all could have said we liked Chihuahuas. So from that instance, you might have a higher propensity of Chihuahua lovers with this survey. But that being said, as long as you know that it's self-selecting, it still provides some very good information as far as what folks who are concerned with transportation and are willing to take a survey, what they think. And again, I'm not going to go through all of these things, so I leave time for Jacob, but I think it is interesting that one of the responses on the top five ways to improve regional mobility and congestion, we see a lot of sustainable options, right, Mary, that were mentioned in the plan that you talked about earlier that was adopted in 2012. We've got Front Range Passenger Rail, expanded public transit, coordinated traffic signals, improved land use planning, and more bicycle and pedestrian facilities. It's hard to say pedestrian after a while. So That again is good information that we were able to use. This provides more information on, again, what some people wanted to see. We had transit improvements, how to improve transit, I believe is the question. Yep, again, in a nod. So things like shorter wait times, expanded areas of service, improved bus stops and shelters, that sort of thing. And so everybody knows, again, one of the requirements in the federal regulations, and it's a requirement of the 5310 funding that the region receives, is that we have a specialized transit and human services plan. It basically says, for the folks that does not have the ability, I think is the term that they use, to use the transit service that is provided by Mountain Metro, within a three-quarter mile beyond that, there is what's known as the transit services that is required. And so that is the service that is provided by Mountain Mobility. But then beyond that three-quarter radius around the existing thing, there are other service providers that are looking to provide services to folks that need to go beyond where the traditional service ends. And it's typically the door-through door where, again, they need assistance getting out of their house and getting into the vehicle. So this effort, again, I think it had an open house with the Independent Center, and it had its own unique survey. So we gathered information of what sorts of things would be most beneficial for folks that need to utilize the service. So again, that plan looks at those things and provides recommendations of how we can have the best coordinated services we can that is complementary to the service that Mountain Mobility provides, as well as the service that Mountain Metro provides as a core service. And so with that, that's a little bit about the overall, what PPACG is, what a little bit about the specialized plan, but then sort of going into a little more of what Jacob's going to talk about. I will say, and sort of finishing up, there are requirements within the state of Colorado for greenhouse gases and other things, right? We sort of stayed the course or status quo with some of the road projects, road widenings. There's not a lot to report there. There's nothing new and exciting. We basically were very limited. We couldn't expand on a lot of things. But the things that are cool and new and innovative as part of this plan are actually transit things. And the reason why is because the state of Colorado has provided more funding for transit projects through the oil and gas settlement funds that are coming in, the rental car tax that's coming in, as well as some of the enterprise funds that are being generated. So we're getting the funding as a tool to actually provide those sorts of services. And with that, those cool sorts of things are what Jacob's going to talk about next, as well as MMT in general.
If you could go back to the slide that listed the five areas to include in the long-range transportation plan, the inputs. And I'm just curious, while you're trying to do that, is how do those long-range projects play into the shorter range, the TIP, or any other shorter length of time plans?
When we do a long-range plan, we're saying those are the things that are the possible future of projects that the region can do in the next 20 to 25 years. But the actual projects that get selected to be done, that's up to the individual jurisdictions, right? So if there is a very specific sort of transit project that you're hoping that Jacob is going to talk about, I don't have any control over that. I don't have any authority over. Remember, I am a MPO, is a planning organization, not an implementing organization, right? So the jurisdictions can tell me what projects they want to do. We sit there and we develop a plan that makes sense of how we're going to do those things. We model them for GHG compliance, right? But at the end of the day, after they're in the plan, that actual implementation goes back to the jurisdictions. So if there's really something here that you're like, boy, I'd really want to know if the downtown zero emissions bus is happening, that's not a me question, that's a Jacob question. And Jacob say, yeah, we've been running the ZEB for 6 months now, a year?
A couple of years, John.
A couple of years. Yeah, I knew that. Well, wow. Can we edit that out, Dave? Anyhow, but providing that funding is something that it does. So we do that, but we don't implement, if that answers your question, Mary.
Well, okay, so let's take Front Range passenger rail. And so I'm sure that crosses a lot of jurisdictions and so forth. So do the jurisdictions collaborate through PPACG and then put together like a rail plan?
For an example, that was a very complicated example.
Sorry.
No, but well, the first thing that has to happen is they've established the district, the Front Range Passenger Rail District. And so they've got a district that's been mapped out that starts in Trinidad and goes all the way up to Wyoming. Yep, I got a nod. Right. And within that, the district has district representatives that are voting on policy. And at this point, they have not brought back anything for the ballot. So there is not district funding per se to do certain things. But the district is a quasi-governmental entity, or probably actually a governmental entity, where it has the ability to go to some of these enterprises that I had earlier mentioned and said, hey, we would like to get some of this rental car tax money for rail improvements, or we would like to get funding from the oil and gas settlement for this, right? So they're eligible to go after some of these funding sources. But how we collaborate is, first off, as a district, they need to have a service development plan. And I believe they're still working on that. That will say, this is where it's going to go, and this is where it's going to stop. Because I cannot have El Paso County, you know, have the Front Range Passenger Rail go like this. And then the second we get into Douglas County, they're like, well, what's going to go like this, right? We got to make sure that they connect. And for them to connect, you have to have that service development plan that sort of gives that route and says, this is the route that we're going to go. Once they've established that route, then they need to sort of then establish what the trains are going to do. Because again, once they establish a route, I could say, oh, we're going to build a station here in El Paso County. Well, we could build our own station or stations, but if there aren't trains to actually stop at those stations and service those stations, that's going to be no good. So I think a long way of answering your question, I'm coming to an answer here, Mary, is that there's still statewide coordination that needs to happen for something like Front Range Passenger Rail, of where the line is going to go and how often the trains are going to run and where they're going to stop. Then the locals, though, will then have the ability to sort of say, well, this is within this big swath, this is where we want our station, and this is what we want around our station, and this is the parking around our station, and these are the restaurants, and these are other things. So there will be a point in the process where local district members will have the ability to have a say in what it looks like and what it feels like and what it does. But that overall operational thing, that's really up to that operational plan and the district to vote on as a state. Does that make sense, or did I dodge your question?
Yeah, it's complicated.
And Mary, say, John, and I can add a little bit on Mountain Metro a few years back did commission a study for a station location where we identified several locations along the assumed rail line where we could put a station, identified the kind of the top ones, the ones that weren't as beneficial. And so we kind of went through that process, developed a general concept plan of what the station could look like. So that is a study we have shared with the Front Range Passenger Rail District. We've worked with them in terms of coordination on that. So the shorter answer is yes, there would be local collaboration, coordination on these sort of things as we go down. Because we want, on the reverse, we don't want them to put a line in that we here locally wouldn't want either based on where our stations would be. So it needs to be a conversation going both ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. All right, I'll introduce Jacob Mattson. While pursuing a degree in community and regional planning at Iowa State University, Jacob began a career in public transportation, actually driving a bus. That's great. From the ground up. Following graduation, Jacob's professional career has included roles such as a regional transportation planner, program coordinator for fixed route and ADA complementary paratransit operations, and currently is the planning and operations supervisor for Mountain Metropolitan Transit. He's going to give us a short and long-term vision for improved public transit service throughout the Pikes Peak region, including increased services, greater regional connections, innovative modes of transit, and more. Okay, Jacob, take it away.
Thank you, Mary. Well, once again, thanks for having myself as well as an ability to represent Mountain Metro Transit. I'm very much happy to be here. I'm going to go ahead and kind of give you some short and long range plans for transit in the region. I've kind of divided my presentation kind of into two parts. The first part is the shorter part, just kind of explaining what it is we currently offer, what our services look like right now. And I'm going to spend a larger amount of my time explaining kind of what came out of our 2050 planning process, internal communications here within transit of where we want to see transit go in the next couple of years and as we head into the next 25 years. First stop on my presentation is kind of just an overarching kind of general breakdown of the services that we offer. So the ones that I have here are bus service. You'll hear the term fixed route. I believe John had said fixed route earlier. Fixed route service is what most people kind of traditionally think of when they think of public transit. They think of the bigger buses, 30, 35, 40 foot, or even what are called articulating buses, which are the where you have the two different parts of the bus. That's kind of what people, most people think when they hear bus service. And that's the most common understanding. Accompanying that is this service that we have called Metro Mobility. This is our ADA complementary paratransit service. John mentioned it during his slides on the human service plan. But what Metro Mobility does is it provides a necessary service for people with disabilities that for whatever reason resulting from a disability, they're not able to use fixed route either some or all of the time. So it offers this additional service for those individuals to make sure they can make their appointments and get to where they want to go. This is required by the law. So 3/4 mile boundary, think of a buffer around every fixed route bus. So that's where we have to follow and pick up those individuals that are within that 3/4 mile. And the other program we have here is a Metro Rides program, which falls under this kind of service called a travel demand management. You'll hear TDM as well. So this is a voluntary service that we have here within Mountain Metro to provide an alternative to your the single occupancy vehicle. This is meant to help those individuals that maybe the bus and for whatever reason, the bus and paratransit aren't going to work for them. They may be traveling outside of our region here to get to work. So this is a service that is helpful to reduce some of those gas emissions and single occupancy vehicle. So I mentioned that bus service. That's our fixed route bus service. I have a picture of a few of our buses here. The one there on the right-hand side, that's our battery electric bus. That's one of our four that is electric only and runs on that. And then the other two are our standard diesel there on the left-hand side. So within our service, it's kind of important to look at where we were, where we've come from, and where we're at. So if you go back to the Great Recession, we were bottoming out right around 2010 in terms of the services that we were offering. So annual revenue service hour, this is kind of a fancy way that the term that we use for explain to people the number of hours we're out there providing service. So revenue service hours from the moment the bus starts service to the moment it's done and right before it heads back to the garage for the end of the night. So following the recession, we were seeing 98,000 revenue service hours as opposed to the 2025 estimate, we're looking at 263. So what, 2.5 to 3 times additional service from what we were seeing in 2010 as we've kind of built through the last 15 years or so. Going back to where we looked at or what service looked like back in 2010, you can kind of see there, I won't go through all these numbers, but you can kind of see the number of routes that we had on a weekday. We were down to 5 routes that were better at or better than 30-minute service. We had nothing that was what right now where we see like the 15-minute service. So we had a far less less service, and we had no Saturday and no Sunday service. So we were pretty well bare bones at that point. Over the last 15 years, we've grown back and put much, much more service out there to right now. We are at full service year round minus the 3 holidays. So we've put a lot more service back on the street, but there's still a lot more to go. We hear it all the time from individuals. We want more service. And that's what we intend on doing as we go into the long term. So in 2024, we provided 2.9 million passenger trips. This is a very slight increase from 2023, just under 1%. But it's interesting to note that in 2023, we did 3 months of fare-free service. And during that time, as you would imagine, we get more people using the bus. So compared to 2024, when we had 2 months of fare-free service. So even though we had one less month of fare-free service, we still saw more passengers on our vehicles. So that's kind of a really, really cool, I guess, stat to reference. Obviously, we want to keep building that and keep bringing more ridership in. And then just a little bit about some of the other offerings that we have are, we have three transfer centers, our downtown terminal, and we upkeep over 980 bus stops. It's a lot of bus stops that we have to manage and look over. And then 71 buses, this is kind of a moving number. We go through a process that we replace buses as they get old and get decommissioned. So this number changes, you know, pretty frequently as we bring more buses on and take more off. So I mentioned our ADA complimentary paratransit service. That's called Metro Mobility, which you see right here is one of those vans. It looks like it's going probably either to or from a pickup. And this is the service that we offer to people with disabilities that cannot use the fixed route for some or all the time. Within this service, we offer origin to destination, meaning that the vehicle will come to the individuals where they want to get picked up and where they want to get dropped off, provided it's within our service area. If it's not, we are able to work with the individual that needs the ride to find a location within our service area to make that pickup work for them. This service operates those same hours as the regular fixed route service and along the same lines as they operate and go along. So Metro Mobility, it's a much, much smaller number, but it's a very, very meaningful number for the people that use the service. In 2024, we saw 122,000 passenger trips on the service, and it was about a 4.1 increase from 2023. And we provide the service to 49 vans. It's a little bit later slide that I have, but I'll kind of address it right now. One of the things we're looking into, and we've kind of started already to roll out, is what's the proper vehicle for this service? From talking with customers, there's a lot of individuals that actually like smaller vehicles. What you're seeing here, we refer to as a cutaway, but there's interest in vans. Now, that doesn't work for everybody, but for those that it does, we are looking into that as additional service option for people using the service. I had previously or earlier mentioned the Metro Rides program. That pretty much consists of these four kind of general programs. The one that I'll probably spend the most time on here is the Vanpool program, but this also includes carpool, school pool, and a bicycle locker rental program. So under the Vanpool program, this is a commuting service that we offer for people that are commuting to from work. There's different rules. I won't go into the exact rules with it. If there's an interest, reach out to our coordinators on that. Reach out to our customer service and they get you in contact with the coordinator on that. But basically what this Vanpool service will do is match with like people that are going to similar locations and match you with them to see if there's an option to commute to and from work. We've had Vanpools that have gone to Denver, down to Pueblo and places between. So it's a nice program for individuals for that. We also offer a carpool and school pool. This is kind of a self-motivated kind of area. We don't actively manage these two programs. We have a website and a way of matching people up to get this to going. And we encourage people with the schools to reach out to us if they're looking to start up a school pool themselves. And then finally, we have a bicycle locker rental program, which allows for a nominal fee use of our bike locker for people that want to get that what we call first last mile connection. It's particularly helpful. Or if they just want a bike locker for their own purposes. But it's another program we offer with the Metro Rides. So that's sort of a maybe not as quick as I intended, but a sort of quick review of the services we offer. Now, as we're looking to the future, and this is where it gets a little bit more interesting, at least from my perspective, talking about this stuff, is we're looking in at the ability to ensure service reliability. That's one of the things we're really focusing on here at Transit. It's a constant theme that we need to look at this service reliability as a very, very important part for our future planning efforts. So one of these ideas here is this right sizing and diversifying of our transit fleet. You may have seen that we have different vehicles out there right now. We're not just using those big, large buses for the fixed route service. Sometimes we're putting out smaller vehicles on those cutaway vehicles for fixed route service. And then talking about the paratransit service that Metro Mobility is, seeing what works best for our customers, what makes it most comfortable for them. This is we're hoping this improves the rider experience. That's, you know, kind of at the heart of all this is making sure our riders are getting the service that they want and that they need and providing it to the best of our ability that we can do it. In addition, we're also looking to upgrade bus stop amenities, build mobility hubs. The mobility hubs is a real big kind of topic right now. We're working and talking with various partners to get these mobility hubs. And kind of the way I describe it, the easiest way to understand it is it's more than a bus stop. It's an inviting sort of bus stop that is more inviting people into the service. It's kind of your gateway. You want to come to a nice clean bus stop that has different amenities. It then might include restrooms. It might include areas for locking up bicycles. It's not your typical bus stop. It's more like a bus stop on steroids. And it also allows for these additional connections with other services. Kind of briefly touched on this, where we are looking at building these community partnerships. This is particularly helpful as we look for where we place those mobility hubs. So each of these groups we're looking at and working with and discussing what can look like for future services and what this could look like to provide to their various constituents and users of their services. Looking at kind of from a rail planning perspective, what kind of came out of our 2050 plan, and I have a slide here very, very shortly on that. What kind of came out of that plan was the increasing frequency and expanding of our routes. If you want to truly compete with the single occupancy vehicle, you want to compete and not have everyone driving their cars, you got to offer a service that is frequent enough and convenient enough for people to use, that people want to use. So we are, you know, investing in that, looking into increasing frequency and expanding those routes. That was a big part of our 2050 update. For some of those more far-reaching outlying areas, we're looking into new services. Well, new services compared to what we're looking at now, we've done these in the past, but new services compared to what we have now are these express routes. So taking people from the outlying area, you know, you look at us and you look at Mountain Metro, and we want to be that regional public transportation option, not just Colorado Springs. We want to be regional. So in order to be regional, you got to be smart with how you expand service, and express routes are one of those options. We're taking people from the outlying areas into the Springs and then back and forth for their trips. Also pursuing these alternative transit options, such as on-demand, these commingled microtransit and bikes. So kind of an exciting thing right now. I can't say a whole lot on it yet because it's just starting to kick off. But we recently had a RFP, a request for proposal, to look into and provide consulting services to look into these additional alternative transit options. So where we mentioned the fixed route service, one thing I like to tell people is fixed route's not the answer to every question on transit. You got to think inventive. So we look at these other services that might not be your traditional fixed route. On demand, think of it as a call ride service. Does it make more sense in some of the outlying areas that might not have enough, either density or enough users to justify a full line fixed route Monday through Sunday all the time? But there might be other alternative transit options that can meet that need that's out there. And this is one of the things we're pursuing. So we're excited to kick off this work with our consultant working on this and coming up with these options. And that's going to be at least a year-long process of looking into this and seeing what we would need to do to be a part of this. And so I'm particularly excited about that because that's just about ready to kick off on our end. And then using technology to improve travel time. I mentioned convenience. Convenience is very, very important. Knowing when your bus is going to arrive and when to expect it. Know when there's a delay. Know if you need to adjust or take a different route. All those things are important to our passengers. So making sure we're investing in those technologies as we move into the future. So I mentioned the regional transit plan. So these kind of six main kind of themes, if you will, kind of came out of that plan. The first bullet, the innovative mobility zones. I kind of touched on that with the on-demand. So that map's a little small. So just look at it this way, the colored blocks kind of surrounding the outskirts of our service area. Those are the areas that were identified as these mobility zones. These are areas that we could look at a more innovative service model to provide service up here, more of an on-demand model, perhaps. We also use this term ETC, Enhanced Transit Corridors. Many people are familiar and have heard the word bus rapid transit called BRT. BRT is a great option. It's a wonderful service that provides much more frequent, convenient, and quick transportation. But it's also a heavy lift, a very expensive option. And there are steps you can take to get towards that. So enhanced transit corridors is the way I look at this. These are some of those steps as you're looking to work your way towards that. So if you're familiar with such items as queue jumpers, where the bus could be in its own lane and get its own light to pass through, that would be kind of a step towards this enhanced transit corridor. So we have identified these various areas within our plan that make sense for this enhanced transit corridor. So that's another exciting one. We looked into crosstown routes. This kind of gets that idea of the more regional connection. What does that look like? We need to have more efficient and more frequent and convenient travel to get from one side of town to the other if we're going to get what we refer to as choice riders. That's particularly helpful. We need additional local and express fixed routes. Like, that's kind of what we're looking at here. That's what our current service looks like. Expanding on that, fixed route is essentially the backbone of public transit. It is the kind of the standard of what you go for most routes. Once again, it's not the answer to everything, but it's this standard you go by. So that's important. We keep investing in our local fixed route system. And then I mentioned mobility hubs. So new transit centers and capital infrastructure, this would fall under that. Making sure that our bus stops are inviting, that people want to be there, that they feel safe, and that it's a good culture for individuals to be around. And then finally, more frequent and later and early service. Once again, getting back to that level of convenience, getting routes off 60-minute frequencies was a very common theme in our plan. Making our minimum 30-minute frequencies as the baseline standard takes a lot of effort. It's a lot of work. There's a lot that would have to be done to do that, but working towards that as we work to this 2050. And then later and earlier service. Presently, we do not have Sunday evening service past about 6:30 on our regular routes and on our downtown shuttle, the Zeb, that goes till 8 on Sunday, providing service in the evening on Sunday so people that have jobs on the weekends can rely on our service and or choose it as a part of how they get to and from work, and also for anything else, not just about work. It's about just being able to live your life the way you want to live it. And the way that we can kind of do our part in that is working towards this idea with more frequent service and then earlier and later service on those days that currently fall short. This is my final slide. I mentioned the express bus. So towards the end of the 2050 planning process, we started working on this express bus network. This is the idea of making this more regional. So you can kind of see just from this map here, it extends, you know, further to the north and beyond to the south, east, and west. This is also built with the idea that services such like Bustang that are coming to the region could potentially have a connection with this and get you quicker within the region. This is something we've been working on, like I said, towards the tail end of the 2050 plan. It was included in the final approved plan, which was approved in February. But this is a network of services that it also, this potentially puts us in good position as we look for additional grant funding from CDOT to expand our services and meet our needs as well as theirs. It gets back to that question that was up earlier about the regional connectivity and how do we connect in the greater region. This is one of the answers to that, to make this a much more convenient option for individuals coming to the region so they can use our services and get connected into our services. So with that, I will stop there. I will take a breath and take any questions.
Dave, go for it.
Okay, thanks. So Jacob, I assume that funding is, of course, probably the biggest obstacle for, you know, achieving a lot of the things you want to achieve.
Yes.
Is greater ridership, would that be a significant revenue generator, or would it be a lot more significant to have, you know, other government taxing funding? What's more realistic to look at?
Well, ridership definitely helps, but it's kind of important to note that this is kind of a little bit of a moving number, but you're really about 10% of the cost of our operations is covered by fares. That's kind of the reality of the situation. So funding really is a critical part of providing additional service. There was a recently, well, I think John had mentioned it earlier, about the gas and oil fund. So something conversation we've been having with CDOT, we don't know what our exact allotment is yet, what we're looking to go for, but it's funding like that that helps us provide and or produce more services. So really it is, it's a combination. Both are needed.
Thanks.
Okay. Could you remind us about the free services that are being offered this summer and why and what impact you see on your services when that happens?
Sure thing. So thank you for bringing that up. Presently, right now we're in June. For June, July, and August, we are doing a free fare for better air campaign. Getting back to the question that David asked, we were able to provide this through a grant, basically, that we got we get it through CASTA, but CASTA is an organization we work with that manages the program, but the name of the program is the Ozone Season Transit Grant Program. It was the Senate Bill 24-032, if people are following legislation, that was allowed to provide funding for this. So we're able to go back for reimbursement from basically from the state in order to fund the services. Last year in 2023 or 2024, we offered this program and we were able to get reimbursed for about $1.1 million in terms of the fair loss revenue. And that was over a 2-month period. So that's kind of what's been allowed to fund this thing. That's what's kind of been helping fuel this. But at present, we're doing these 3 months this year. And then at this point, there's no indication that that funding will be available for next year. So it's unlikely that we will be running the same program next year, unfortunately.
Well, I know ozone is an increasing challenge, so it may be important for that to happen again every summer, just because of attainment, non-attainment, as John mentioned.
Oh, and you had asked about ridership as well. Sorry. So I think a good comparison to look at. So last year, I mentioned we only did 2 months, and the previous year that we did 3 months. So the month we didn't do last year was June. And if you looked at June of 2024 versus 2023, there was a 23% decrease in ridership for that month, doing a month-to-month comparison on our fixed route service. So it definitely pulls a significant amount of ridership within it. And we see the hill as it comes up, and then as it goes away, a little bit of a drop off at the back end, back to the normal ridership levels.
Yeah, you do see a little bit of an increase, though, of people continuing to use the service.
You know, it's kind of hard to gauge whether or not. I mean, it's, you know, ask the individual, you know, are you staying on? Because, I mean, we're the surveying, is there a surveying of individuals that would potentially help with that we haven't done in a large statistically valid way? But ultimately, we do see that drop off and return into the kind of previous levels. But that being said, over the last couple of years, every year we've seen an uptick in ridership in general. So we've kind of seen this general trajectory going up just a little bit between the last 2 years, but we're seeing this increase in ridership every year. At least since we bottom out kind of during the COVID, when COVID really hit, going back from that period of time.
Yeah. Well, we've come to 1 o'clock, so I'll go ahead with some closing remarks and information. A recording of the SIP will be available on Studio 809's Peak Environment podcast website in 1 to 2 weeks. You can sign up for Peak Alliance for a Sustainable Futures monthly newsletter to receive information about the SIP and other community events. Follow the Sustainable and Resilient Pikes Peak Region Facebook group to stay informed about the region's sustainability progress and share your efforts and opportunities. And if there are friends or colleagues that you wish were here to hear the presentation, don't forget it will be out in 1 to 2 weeks on a podcast. So recommend that to your friends. And we thank Studio 809 Podcast for making this happen. In particular, special thanks to Dave Gardner for producing the recordings, and to Pikes Peak Permaculture for supporting Peak Environment. Visit pikespeakpermaculture.org for opportunities to learn about sustainable organic living through permaculture, including workshops, classes, field trips, and networking. I mentioned a lot of things you can sign up for. I did put those links in the chat, or I will here. As soon as I can manipulate myself here. Oh, sorry. All right. There. Now they should be in the chat. And Dave, you had something on there. Oh, Dave's going to try to get the episode out before Bike to Work Day, since we talked about it and as part of that. So that'd be great if he could make that happen. And any other announcements anybody might have to make? Just to reiterate that Mountain Metro and also Fountain Municipal Transit has free summer rides in 2025 that have begun June 1st and go through August 31st. So take advantage of that. And the Mountain Metro link is in the chat. Mark your calendars for the next Sustainability in Progress, which will be on July 16th, 12 to 1 via Zoom. And a big shout out to our presenters today. Thank you so much. That was very informative and interesting. I'll add one last thing is I was the sustainability manager for Fort Carson years ago. And we were, one of our goals was to reduce single occupant vehicles. And that was just, it's just such a challenge, especially for those military installations. So I know what you're up against there. But Fort Carson also looked strongly at personal rapid transit. And so if you haven't taken a look at that, you might do so. And it might be something workable for those further out communities as you're trying to get more ridership on your Mountain Metro Transit. Just a thought. Okay. Any closing remarks from you all?
Just thank you very much for having us.
All right. Well, thank you for participating. It was really informative. And I mentioned single occupant vehicles, I think on one of your charts, it's about the same as it was when I retired from Fort Carson in 2017. So there hasn't been a lot of progress made there. Of course, we've had a lot more people come to the region as well. So
you know, I think the pothole situation might cause that to change because it's getting to be unaffordable to keep replacing tires and doing front end repairs because of we're the pothole capital of America, apparently. So ride the bus.
and just repairing the roads and maintaining them. Yeah.
Well, thanks, all right. Mary.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
I was going to give encouragement to individuals listening that if you're ever kind of on the fence of trying to use transit, use it during this fair free months. It's easy to just hop on and then get off where you want to get off. And now's the time to try it if you were wondering.
Yeah. Yeah. Great time to try it out. All right. Thank you for joining us on this month's Peak Alliance for a Sustainable Futures Sustainability in Progress speaker series. The discussions have been great with you guys, and let's keep it going. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Peak Environment. This episode was courtesy of Peak Alliance for a Sustainable Future. For more information, visit peakalliance.org.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.